It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, everybody. I am super excited. For a very, very long time, I have been dismayed, I guess, for lack of better terms, about the public education system. And here in the great state of Arizona, we rank somewhere, I believe, either 48th or 49th in public education or in education. And that's alarming. But my guest today is Robert Bortons. Robert Bortons, his passion is to help people fulfill the gift that God has given them. He is the CEO of Classical Conversations. And we're going to find out what Classical Conversations is all about. He's got a kind of an interesting story, how he evolved into being the CEO at Classical Conversations. But Classical Conversations equips parents to educate their children using timeless tools of learning within the current culture. I happen to have some friends who use the Classical Conversations system, and what they teach is amazing. And it's really what the public system, I think the public school system could maybe learn from. And it's an amazing system. Either way, Robert Bortons, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Excited to be here and just to tell your audience a little bit about what we know about education, and as well as, you know, share our story and just have a good time together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's start from the beginning. Tell us about Classical Conversations and how this all started.
Yeah, well, I'll try to give you the short version. My mom and my dad both have aerospace engineering degrees from the University of Michigan. My mom is 9 years younger than my dad, and when they met, she realized that he had study skills that she didn't have. And so she's kind of been on this lifelong quest for why, because the world tells her that she's smart. You know, she's worked on NASA projects, she's worked for Boeing. So she decided to homeschool her children. And through that, she really discovered that my dad had a classical education and she did not. And unfortunately for me, she didn't figure that out until I was in middle school. So I'd been homeschooled up to then, and so she decided to start a classical education high school program. And so in 1997, it was myself and 10 other students. We got together and discussed history and science and math and learned Latin and read the great books together. And from those 11 students in 1997, fast forward to 2002, I'm at college, Clemson University, studying industrial engineering. I get a phone call from my mom, and she goes, "Hey, your dad's thinking about buying you a car because you don't have one and you're, you know, out of state." I said, "But instead, he quit his job. We're not paying for any more tuition. Figure it out. I'm going to see if Classical Conversations can be a real business." And so I immediately went to the co-op office and said, "Hey, I don't have any money for tuition next semester. Can I get a co-op job?" Got the highest paid co-op job that you could get because my resume from high school was 2 pages long of actual engineering work that I was able to do because I had that flexibility of being homeschooled. And so I worked as an engineer in high school for a local company. And I paid for school myself. I rented out closets. I slept on the top of high school students' bunk beds. I slept in my car for a month while my mom was trying to build this business up, and really just so everything worked out. And in 2012, after 6 years of working as an industrial engineer, my mom asked if I'd come help her lead the business. At that point, we had about 49,000 students and 30 employees. We sit here today, we're expecting to be around 130,000 students. Wow. Worldwide this fall. We are in about 50 countries. We have nearly 150 employees now. And we've just been real blessed to really create a program, a system that parents can implement with multiple children, and it follows the natural learning that children go through, and just a real fun community to build each other up on days where it might be tough to homeschool.
Sure, sure. All right, so here you are, you're in the public school system, and all of a sudden your mom says, hey, we're gonna start this new program and I'm gonna start homeschooling you, is that what it is?
No, I was homeschooled the whole way
through. Oh, the whole time. Okay.
The whole time. So after my parents graduated, we were homeschooled the whole time.
Okay.
But when I was in middle school, they didn't know what to do next because they didn't know necessarily how to homeschool through. They weren't sure if they were going to homeschool through high school or not. So like everyone, they kind of looked at some private schools, public schools, talked to headmasters just to see what was out there. And that was when they decided, my dad encouraged my mom just to start her own program.
Wow. Okay. And so, your mom starts this program, call it Classical Conversations, with you and 10 other students.
Yeah.
And that was what, 1997.
Yes.
We fast forward and we have how many students now?
We're expecting over 125, maybe 130,000 this fall.
Wow. That's amazing. And so I want to talk about this real quick, because you mentioned this already. So one of the things that you guys study is Latin.
Right.
And I heard this and I'm going, why would you study Latin? And then of course, you know, Latin is used in medicine and it's used in legal and maybe some other disciplines as well. But Latin is kind of a weird subject for high school students, for students to learn in general. And you guys, and then what's interesting is you guys don't start studying Latin like in high school. You guys in Classical Conversation, you start studying it almost right away, right?
Yeah, my six-year-old is in been in CC for 2 years, and so she's been starting to study the Latin grammar. And so, yeah, we study it for 12 years, start with just the Latin grammar with the young students to translating the Aeneid for our 12th graders.
Okay, and so
yeah,
why study Latin?
Study Latin? Well, there's a couple of things. One, it teaches you logic because of how Latin is structured. It forces your brain to structure itself logically, which of course we're missing a lot of that in today's debates. You can see in the political and government spectrum.
Yeah.
As well as it's the foundation for so many other languages that are the romantic languages such as Spanish, all of these derived from Latin. And then the other thing is, hey, technology is a big thing. Guess what? If you're a computer programmer, you better understand logic and how languages work. And so if you've studied Latin, you know, and you want to go work for a cryptocurrency company or Tesla or an Apple, and you've got Latin on that resume and understand how languages work and programming languages, then you're going to have a leg up. Our chief information officer here at Classical Conversations, he knows 40 different programming languages. And
wow.
So if you have a Latin background, programming languages don't change. They change often. Latin doesn't change, but once you learn those logical structures, as the programming languages change and move, you're able to adapt faster. And so as we see the business space moving faster and faster, those who have Latin in their background are going to have a leg up on the rest of society.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. And when people hear about homeschooling, like I love the idea of homeschooling. But I'm thinking, man, back when my kids were young, I don't know if I have the patience for homeschooling, because patience is, to me, is a skill, right? And so
right.
It's one thing to say, hey, Robert, learn this stuff, and that's great. But you know, if you have one kid, that's fairly easy. But if you have two or three or four and they're in different grades and they're going in different directions, I could see a parent saying, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. So how
right.
do you guys work with that?
Yeah. So the great thing about our curriculum is written by homeschooling moms and dads for homeschooling moms and dads. So a couple of things that we do is our first through or kindergarten through sixth grade program is the basics are all the same. So whether you're in sixth grade, third grade, and first grade, If you have all three of kids in those grades, they're all doing the same basic material on a weekly basis. And then, hey, the sixth grader maybe is writing a paragraph about the science experiment versus the third graders maybe just drawing a picture of it. And the kindergartner was just sitting there watching the two older siblings do it. And so that's part of it is how we've structured our program. And then as they get into the middle school and high school age, students really become self-teachers. They learn themselves. So what we do is really help the parents show them how to impact and provide the students with the ability to educate themselves. So we want to create lifelong love of learning and lifelong learners. And so by the time, so we really help the parents do that. So the parents aren't having to answer hard questions about physics, but we teach the parents how to ask the right questions and impact the students so that they know how to go find that answer for themselves. So it's really making the parents understand what questions to ask their older students. And so, you know, if you're pulling a kid out for the first time and maybe you don't have that relationship built up, or, you know, we're all sinners. We all have our faults. You know, of course, patience is a big thing to do. You know, work on that relationship at first, because, you know, that's a big part of homeschooling. You know, if you start young, you kind of get some of that benefit. But there's always going to be tears, headbutting, such everything like that. I mean, that's just the way it is. But that's why our secret sauce is our community. So you're not doing this alone. One day a week at Classical Conversations, you'll get together with a group of parents. One of them we've trained in our methodology to train other parents. And you and your students get together with them in a small group of about 6 to 8 students typically, and go over the curriculum that you're going to be doing that next week. And then for the older students, you do some review of the previous week, and the parents don't necessarily have to be there. But that makes it so that you have this community of people who are like, hey, little Johnny is acting up this way. You know, someone else like, oh, you know, my kid had that same experience, and this is what we did to fix it. So you got that group of people who are, you know, working on that same curriculum with you, but also doing life together. And so when you have those, oh, I just, you know, want to wring my kid's neck, like, you know, Bart Simpson or something moment, which we all have,
right?
You know, you're able to go get some resources and some help just from a friend. Because a lot of times, you know, even my wife and I sometimes, you know, get at each other. And, you know, it's always good to have a group of people who are trying to achieve the same goals that you are, that you're able to, you know, just bounce ideas off of.
Sure, sure. All right. And one of the things I want to also bring up is Classical Conversations program has a Christian theme. I don't know if it's, I don't know how explicit it is, or is it just an underlying theme? Talk about this.
Yeah. So we come at education from a biblical worldview, a Christian worldview. And so you don't have to be a Christian to use our program. We have people of all sorts of faiths and backgrounds that use it. But we're going to look at the world and think that it's orderly, that it was created by someone who loves us. And that's how we're going to approach these subjects. And we're going to say that, hey, if the world was created by someone who loves us, we're going to be able to know it. And if we know the world around us, we're going to be able to know our creator. And so that's really kind of the worldview that we're going to do in community as we're discussing. And of course, for the younger kids, it's not quite as obvious because you're not having worldview discussions with, you know, 5 and 6 years old. But, you know, when they get to 10th, 11th, 12th grade, you know, they're going to look at these subjects and say, you know, what does the Bible say about this? Or how could this reflect God's love for us? And so it's just kind of incorporated into our everyday conversations. We don't have a separate Bible class. Like, we don't necessarily say, hey, you know, we're going to get together and study the Bible. You know, we believe that that's the church's responsibility. But we also think that if God created the world, then everything in it can tell us something about him, and we can learn something about the world knowing God's nature. And so that's really what's woven into all of our curriculum.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I'm a big fan of that. I think that that's one of the things that's missing from our society is we forget sometimes who created us, where we came from. And you have people who get lost. They forget that connection. And, you know, when I was growing up, you know, public prayer in school was a thing. And then, of course, that got, what's the word, that got legalized out or whatever. And I understand why they did it, but it's just one of the things, not to get too deep into the spiritual, but I think this is one of Satan's tools, for lack of better terms, you know? And so, yes, for a legal reason, public prayer was eliminated. But I think it's just one of those threads that has been removed. And I think that as a society, we've suffered for that, because again, it's something that we forget about.
This in truth, like you hear the term now, hey, live your own truth, or what's true for you is not true for me. When you have an education system that has just, it's abandoned the idea that there is ultimate truth that could be known. Right. It just doesn't, it's simply the underlying philosophy of our government schools is there is no truth to be known. And so when you put a child into that system, even though, hey, 2 + 2 = 4 is great, you know, but why is that true? Or now they ask questions like, how does that make you feel? You know, hey, you know, we're now eliminating AP courses in Virginia and California for math because math is racist. So it's like, okay, like let's try to educate our children in a way that is going to make their lives full and able to really achieve their God-given gifts in a way that that makes their lives fulfilling, and not just negating and saying, if truth doesn't exist, then what's the point of education? And of course, we see that in our scores, our national test scores going down, our ranking of education compared to other countries going down, because we start with the philosophy that truth doesn't matter and it doesn't exist.
Sure. You know, it's funny, listening to you reminded me, I guess whenever it happened 4 or 5 years ago, when Bruce Jenner was awarded Woman of the Year, you know, you know, we're heading for trouble when a man, former man, whatever you want to use, transgender, whatever, becomes Woman of the Year. And it's just like that right there to me tells you how messed up our society has become or is becoming. It's important. I think that one of the great things about having this homeschooling environment is that you as the parent are able to instill these truths into your children and also protect them from, from a lot of, let's say, negative influences.
You've got to understand, like they say, well, children are going to learn about this. Let's expose them as early as possible. Well, it's not the way the brain develops. That's not the way that suits children best. What suits children best is to give them information at the level that you can give it to them. So, from a biblical standpoint, right, we teach little children about Noah's Ark and Daniel in the lion's den. And, you know, David and Goliath, very simple stories to give them a very simple theology, versus, you know, as an adult, right, you should be, you know, if you're a Christian, you're in a Bible study and digging deep and like, where is this referenced and where's that reference, right? And if you gave that deep meat to a child right away, you know, it wouldn't necessarily make a lot of sense to them. So the important thing with all of that is they're just trying to normalize it. By giving it to children younger and younger, these ideas that aren't necessarily healthy for them and is not necessarily going to produce a flourishing culture.
Sure, sure. I want to go back to what you said in the beginning, where classical conversation teaches children in a natural format. And I want you to expand on that a little bit, because what does that mean that when you say that you guys are using the natural way that children learn? Expand on that if you would.
Sure. And it's called the classical method. And so if you've had children, you know that they don't mind reading the same book over and over again. You know, they have their favorite book that they want daddy or mommy to read to them every night before you go to bed. They watch a TV show and they memorize the theme song right away. So their brain, as they're learning new words, right? They're learning about the world around them. Their brain in the development is just great at memorizing. And so the public schools, you'll hear them say, rote memorization is boring, rote memorization is bad, versus a classical education says, oh no, rote memorization is good. It is fun. When you make it fun, now you can make anything boring or you can make anything fun, right? So make it fun. You know, we play games. So we have our students every single year memorize 1,200 different facts across 6 different subjects.
Wow.
And so so they memorize from, you know, science terms, you know, history points of history, math terms. And we don't expect them to understand it because their brain shouldn't. But one of the problems that we have with science, you know, STEM in our country, science, technology, engineering, and math, is we're trying in the older grades to teach children two ideas at the same time. They don't know their multiplication tables, and now you're throwing in X or I or N,
right?
And they're like, I don't understand algebra. It's like, no, you don't understand. The problem with algebra is you didn't understand multiplication. Versus my 5-year-old can give the multiplication tables 1 times 1 through 15 times 15.
Wow.
She doesn't know what that means, right? But I say, hey, what's 4? Give me the 14 multiplication tables. And she'll go 14 times 1 to 14 times 15 and give me all that information. I ask her for the periodic table. My chemistry class at Clemson University, freshman 101 Chem 1, if you knew the periodic table, if you had that memorized, you probably would have gotten a B in that class just from taking the test.
Wow.
Like our 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, they memorize the periodic table. Do they know what any of those things mean? No. But when it's time for chemicals and interactions and those things start happening in higher level chemistry, they're not trying to learn, you know, the weights, the atoms, you know, the symbols, because they've already memorized it when they're young. And so that's what we do for the young students. Starting in middle school, kids start asking why a lot, and they start going through puberty, and that starts the brain through another process. And so through that process, we really start getting those memory pegs that they've learned and start comparing them. So we call that the logic stage, where, hey, if this is happening over here, well, why not this over here? And so that's called the dialectic or logic stage, and we start using that brain mentality in middle school. And then finally, in high school, we use the rhetorical skills. So you hear, you know, public speaking is more fearful by Americans than death itself.
Right.
Our students do public speaking for 12 years, and they do that in the classroom. They get up, they defend their ideas, they present their ideas. In 12th grade, they're leading the seminars themselves, and they have we have mock trial, I think, for our 8th or 9th graders. So we do all of these things to get them to express their ideas verbally, combat them, test them out against other ideas. And we use that, you know, taking the best material from our past, from our history, and getting that in front of them, getting them studying those ideas, and then having robust discussion around it.
And I think one of the key things I picked up on there is the discussion, the fact that you're teaching them not only how to use the logic, but also how to defend their position, whatever position. And this is one of the things I learned in high school in debate is, mm-hmm. you know, the teacher would assign you different positions. And sometimes you would receive a position that maybe you weren't 100% aligned with. Thank you. But you had to do that. And because you're going through this process, it would teach you how to defend even a position that maybe you didn't like, or it would better, it would better solidify the position that you did like or whatever. But bottom line is, this is something that, again, that you see that has been, especially in social media, and, you know, there are a lot of people who will put forth an opinion, and since they cannot defend it, they start attacking people personally. They attack, you know, they use profanity, they use all forms of attack because they cannot defend their position. And this is something that, again, as adults, it's one thing to have a position. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you can defend it with, let's say, kindness, with civility, then you come across as a very intelligent individual, as opposed to, you know, that person is dumb because they don't believe what I believe.
Right. Yeah. And our partisan divide just keeps getting more one way or another. And a lot of that is due to not having debate, not having that public speaking skills, not having that logic, because oftentimes left and right agree on the problem, but not the solution.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we don't even see eye to eye that there's a problem on a lot of things these days. So it's, I don't know, for me personally, I always want to be as closely aligned with what's true as possible, because I think that will give me the best chance of having a flourishing life, loving my wife and children, and doing what I'm put on this earth to do. And so, you know, for me, I don't ever want to come in with like my ideas 100% right, because I know very rarely in my life have I ever been 100% right. There's always something that I don't quite see and that I can improve upon.
Yeah. I think that's again, to me, that's a sign of somebody who's open to, you know, receiving more information. And when you come across, when you have that thought that, hey, I'm not always 100% right, then again, you know, it's not a headbutting situation. And then back to what you're saying, ultimate truth. There is ultimate truth in the universe. And the closer we align to that ultimate truth, the more clarity we have for our family and our business and our life. Okay, so let's talk about this real quick. I'm homeschooling. And so how do I prove to the state that my children have achieved a certain grade level, or how does that work?
Well, each state has different regulations. I'm not quite familiar with the ones in Arizona, but most of them have, like in North Carolina, I'll speak to that because that's where I'm from. At the beginning of the school year, you send them a notice that you're intending to homeschool. They don't approve it or disapprove it. You just send them a notice. And then you have to educate them for 180 days. So you keep a calendar of those days that you homeschool. And then you have end of grade testing requirement. And that's a nationally normed test. There's 5 or 6 of them. Some of them are used in our public school system. Some of them aren't. And then you take those tests. And so for that, it's usually just, so as long as you're doing those things, the end results don't necessarily matter in that. In like Florida, you can either do an end of grade test or get an assessment from an approved teacher, a certified teacher. And in some states, you don't have to do anything. So each state has different regulations around education.
Gotcha. All right. So, and I love that. So again, using North Carolina as the example, you just send in this notice, this is what I'm doing. Great. I love the idea of the power that homeschooling gives parents, right? You're able to, again, it gives you so much power and also so much flexibility, because if it's 180 days, one of the things that I know some homeschooling parents do is they travel together and they homeschool along the way,
which
I think is fantastic. I mean, again, I always think of if you could not only study history, but walk through it like the original 13 colonies, and you're able to kind of, you know, visit some of these original 13 colonies, talk about bringing history to life. And
yeah, you can do it like, I mean, we're on the East Coast. So if we're studying about the Civil War, like we can do a, you know, it'd be a 2 or 3 day trip up to Gettysburg. And not only, you know, we can listen to audio CDs on the way about the Civil War, about Abraham Lincoln, about Robert E. Lee, about Stonewall Jackson, about, you know, all the different, you know, what's going on in slaveries. We can learn about, you know, all that stuff in the car, get out of the car, stand on the battlefield, you know, look for old bullets, go to some of the old houses and see where, you know, they were scarred by gunfire, you know, and then, you know, come back down. And not only, like you said, not only are you engaging you know, eyes and ears and brain, but now you've got your sense of smell, you know, your feel, you got the wind. You can really imagine, it makes history really come to life. And the same thing with, you know, any sort of thing that you want to do. I have a friend who just took the year off from, they just took the year to travel the United States. And so they rented an RV and did their schoolwork every single day in the RV. But I just remember going up, and of course, Disney World was a little bit different than it is right now. But, you know, we'd go in October when, you know, everyone was in school and there'd be no lines, or when the state fair was here, right? We'd go in the morning and you'd ride the terror wheel, you know, 1,000 times. And then your friends from public school would get off and like, hey, let's go ride the terror wheel. I was like, well, I've already ridden it like 20 times and there's a 2-hour wait to go ride it once, you know? So it really just gives you that flexibility. And like I mentioned briefly at the beginning, I wanted to be an engineer. So we found a 12-person engineering company, and I interned for them starting when I was 16. So
wow.
During the school year, I went one day a week. I was there one day a week working for them. In the summer, I worked full time. I was able to get engineering experience, worked on projects with Fortune 500 companies, learned that I did want to be an engineer, but I did not want to be a computer engineer. And if I had been in a school building, you know, 8 hours a day, that opportunity wouldn't have been there for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to get that life experience. Maybe I would have gone to college and, you know, I would have gone into computer engineering, and 3 years into it, I would have realized this isn't what I want to do. You know, and had my mom called me up and said, hey, I want you to, you know, you got to pay for school yourself. Well, I probably wouldn't have gotten the best paying co-op job, because I would have had a resume that didn't stand out, that didn't have that work experience on it. So, I mean, the flexibility of homeschooling is such a blessing. Our time here on earth is very limited, 70 or 80 years. And for me to think of like being forced 8 hours a day to be in one building day in and day out for 12 of your first 18 years versus the flexibility of being able to homeschool and to pursue life, pursue your passions, I think the choice is starkly clear.
Sure. Well, and this is where I think the public school system really fails their students. And that is whether or not you're inclined to have certain strengths. There are some children, some people that are going to be gifted in math. And I think they should be allowed to have as much math as they want. And what can we do to help them take those math skills, and how are they going to use that in their pursuits? And there's some people who are going to be gifted in other areas. Let's say maybe it's going to be literature. Maybe it's going to be some other creative area. And again, that's what homeschool allows, you know, using your example. You would not have had that opportunity in a public school system. You would have to be there, like you say, 8 hours a day. And if for you to go and work during the school day, you'd have to jump through all these hoops, and maybe they would have let you, maybe they wouldn't, who knows. All right, real quick, so we're getting short on time. I want to talk about, you wrote let me see if I can pull it up here, because I want to talk about this. It is A Dad's Guide to Classical Education in Under 15 Minutes. Talk about the Dad's Guide.
Yeah, so that's a free download for dads, or moms can read it to grandparents. But classical education, when you first hear about it, uses a lot of strange terms. And so I really wanted to break it down into ways that is understandable and approachable to dads especially. So I talk about sports and how classical education is how we learn to play football and basketball, and how Michael Jordan practices dribbling every day. And that's called the grammar stage. I talk about, like we mentioned, like why Latin, you know, who's employing these Latin people? Mark Cuban, you know, is big on the liberal arts and why it's so important. You know, Apple, a lot of their executives won't let their kids touch technology because they know it doesn't help them learn. It doesn't help their brain develop. Yet our public school teachers are fundraising for more iPads for their kindergartners. And so why should we sacrifice our time, effort as adults to give our children a classical education? And A Dad's Guide to Classical Education in under 15 minutes, because we know you don't have a lot of time, really breaks down why we do what we do, the end results for your family, for your children, and how to help them flourish their entire life.
Yeah, and this is so important. You know, we, again, here in our society, we stress the importance of education. You have to go to college, but yet we're not doing anything with those formidable years, and we're not pressuring our government and our leaders to update the school system. And what's really funny is when you talk to public school teachers, they don't want to change anything either. They have no motivation to change things, which is one of the reasons they're pushing iPads, right? Hey, let's learn, you know, because it takes the stress off of them. And look, and I get it. If you're a teacher and you're responsible for, in some cases, 40 or 50 students in a class.
Yeah, my wife was a public school teacher for, I think, 6 or 7 years, and she saw 200 to 300 different students per day. And if you think of like Jim Collins and Good to Great, yeah, and Patrick Lencioni, they say like one manager at work where you're paid to be and, you know, want to be because should manage 8 people.
Maximum.
7 to 8.
Yeah.
Maximum in a business environment where both of you are in theory on the same page, right, trying to accomplish the same thing. One teacher cannot love 300 kids no matter how much effort and energy they put in it. So they just get worn out. It's not the teacher's fault necessarily. It's the system has been just designed. And the teachers, you know, a lot of them are superheroes, but even Superman wouldn't be able to educate these kids because they're just put in a system that is not designed to educate them well, unfortunately. So I mean, anything to help them out. And the teachers aren't given good information about technology and why it's going to damage these children. They're told by the system it's a good thing.
Right.
And so it's just a sad state, and it's just going to perpetuate itself unless really we got to remove our kids out of that system and not let it happen to us and our families, and show people that there's a better way to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So if I'm a dad or a mom and I want to download or get a hold of the Dad's Guide to Classical Education, where can I go for that?
Yeah, so you can go to classicalconversationsbooks.com, long URL, and just search A Dad's Guide to Classical Education. It'll be a free PDF. I'm sure you could put it into your favorite search engine, whether it's DuckDuckGo or Bing or Google, and just search A Dad's Guide to Classical Education, Robert Bortons, and I'm sure it'll pop up there as well. But classicalconversationsbooks.com will be your ultimate ending point for that.
Great, great. ClassicalConversationsBooks.com. Go there. And Robert, it's been a blast having you on the show. I'm excited about Classical Conversations, and it's classicalconversations.com or .org?
Classicalconversations.com.
.com for you guys who want to go and check them out. And it's just a fabulous system. Like I said, I've met several parents who use Classical Conversations, and you know, it's just, to me, it's something I wish I would have known about when I was, when I had young kids. But anyway, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to having you back again.
Thank you so much, and love to come back. Appreciate it. Hope everyone had fun.
All righty.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.